This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Shazana, Roshan and Noel. It's 7:48 in the morning. We are turning our attention to the very pressing issue of climate change because we're in code red when it comes to climate change, according to the United Nations. The UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, or IPCC, issued a report this week stating unequivocally that human activity is driving climate change. And the authors say that since 1970, global surface temperatures have risen faster than in any other 50-year period over the past 2,000 years.
This report warned that the Earth will exceed 1.5 degrees Celsius of warming within the next 20 to 30 years, even if greenhouse gas emissions fall significantly. We are already seeing the effects of climate change the world over. It's no longer just a threat. And this year, we're already seeing things like heat waves, flooding, wildfires, and extreme temperatures in every part of the world. Earlier this week, in fact, wildfires in Greece. And the report comes less than 3 months before a key United Nations Climate Summit in Glasgow, known as COP26, that will happen in November.
So the environmental experts have spoken. The world leaders are coming together in November. What should nations do next? And more importantly, what does Malaysia have to do to address climate change impact here at home? So for more on this, we're speaking to Alizan Mahadi, Senior Director of Research at the Institute of Strategic and International Studies, or known as ISIS Malaysia. Good morning, Alizan. Thanks for joining us today. So the UN IPCC report was described as terrifying in immediate reactions by world leaders. Why has this particular IPCC report garnered so much attention? What's its significance?
Okay, first and foremost, we have to understand that the IPCC is the authoritative source for climate change. This is because it is scientifically credible and legitimate as well in terms of its process. The scientific credibility is attained through a very rigorous and inclusive review process by thousands of scientists across the whole world, and its findings are also legitimized by them being reviewed and accepted by all governments. So the IPCC, therefore, is a consensus among scientists and governments around the world, and therefore, whatever the IPCC reports, we should really take it seriously. Secondly, is the findings of this report, and you've already highlighted some of them, that it states that it is virtually certain that global warming is human-made, highlighting that it is unequivocal that human influence has warmed the atmosphere, oceans, and land. Previous reports use language such as it being extremely likely caused by humans, but this report shows that the verdict is very clear. Humans are responsible for climate change. And on top of confirming this, the findings are also very alarming, as you've highlighted as well. Scientists can now link extreme weather events, such as those that you highlighted, heat waves, wildfires, such as the recent one in Canada, where an entire town was burned down. It is now attributed to climate change. Southeast Asia as well, we can expect higher precipitation, which will result to floods. And such extreme weather events will bring a massive level of destruction. And as you mentioned, UN Secretary General called this a code red for humanity. And of course, you've also highlighted that the timing of this report is also very important. It's 3 months before COP26, but this year's meeting is particularly important as the world looks to increase its climate ambition and pledges for climate action.
Why are we falling behind in tackling climate change? Are the targets set not aggressive enough, or perhaps governments are slacking off?
Okay. First of all, in terms of the targets and commitments, we have to understand that from a global perspective, that climate action has always been a debate amongst North and South countries, amongst developed and developing countries. And in this sense, Malaysia's overall target and commitment of reducing carbon emissions intensity by 45% over 2005 levels is acceptable maybe from a developing country point of view. Nonetheless, as the report shows, there is real urgency in terms of this climate crisis, and certainly our targets could be more ambitious. We do not have an absolute target. Our targets are coupled with our GDP output. We do not have a long-term target. For example, many countries are including a target for carbon neutrality or net zero emissions by 2050 or so on. And we do not also have clear implementation plans as well. We have a climate change policy, but we do not have, whether it be mitigation action plans or adaptation action plans. So due to these challenges, I think Malaysia is still a long way from really addressing the climate crisis.
Now, Alizan, the report paints many doomsday scenarios, and it's easy to fall into a kind of fatalism here. But that's just what the authors say we shouldn't do. So maybe you can help us understand the base case and what the upsides could possibly be.
Well, yes, first of all, the findings of the report are very alarming. It shows that human-induced climate change is not only projected, but as you also mentioned, happening now. And worse, the projections show that under all the scenarios, even if we actually reduce our emissions significantly in the long term, we will still likely reach above 1.5 degrees Celsius warming by 2040. And it could even happen earlier if emissions aren't reduced. And you know what? The current commitments are on track to reduce warming to only about 3 degrees Celsius. However, there is some upsides to it. And the upside is that it does also show that we can still do something about it. And halting every degree counts. It shows that with 0.5 degree warmer, the impacts become much more severe, much more extreme. And the key here is to reduce emissions and reduce them quickly. The report highlights that there is still a chance to halt the temperature rise if we cut global emissions in half by 2030 and reach carbon neutrality by 2050, where the amount of emissions we produce is the same as the amount of carbon we remove from the atmosphere. So in reality, our hope is really likely a mix of decarbonizing our energy systems and economy as soon as possible, as well as improved measures for climate change adaptation as well, in ensuring measures such as flood mitigation systems, resilient agriculture practices, and so on.
Alizan, I mean, all eyes are going to be on the COP26 in Glasgow. How do you think this report will shape discussions and subsequent international commitments? Should we expect to see greater commitments from all the countries as a result of the damning report?
Well, first of all, we have to understand that the COP26, the climate summit under the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, it is an international political process with countries negotiating their position on climate action. And in this sense, climate change is really a collective action problem. And to avoid the tragedy of the commons, countries that are ready to act also want others to share responsibility and ensure that they are not punished for their own commitments to climate change and remain economically competitive and avoid free riders and so on. So while each country is different in their capabilities, level of development and characteristics, this report will provide the compelling evidence of the urgency for climate action for all countries. For countries that are worst hit, such as, for example, Maldives, they may use this report to as evidence to support their stand. And this is actually already happening. A former Maldives president highlighted that the country is at risk of being at the edge of extinction, as Maldives is under threat of being completely submerged underwater, and that they are paying for their lives because of carbon emitted elsewhere. So here you can see how the report can be used to justify the stance and the positions of certain countries. Also, the fact that this report garnered so much attention and is influencing public discourse means that in some countries, which are perhaps more environmentally oriented, failing to act will also come at a political cost.
I wonder if you can shed some light into this, Alizan. Basically, not all countries pollute equally, right? To just simplify the whole situation here. Which countries are the biggest hurdles in terms of us being able to make a significant change to the ongoing trajectory?
Of course, the biggest countries are the biggest emitters, and you can't get any bigger than the two major powers, which is United States and China. On top of that, climate change is really a cross-cutting issue, meaning that it, of course, affects every industry. When once again, large countries such as US and China, even large blocs such as the EU, if they commit to higher ambition, it will have a ripple effect in terms of its trading, for example, practices and trading with countries like Malaysia. That will also affect the ambition of other countries. So here, I think, for example, in the past, we have seen in the run-up to the Paris Agreement as well, is that the agreement was only possible because of the agreement between the US and China, which preceded the Paris Climate Summit itself. So here we can see the actions of these large nations, of powerful nations, will have the ripple effects. And other countries will most likely follow suit.
All right, Alizan, thanks so much for speaking with us today. That was Alizan Mahadi, Senior Director of Research at the Institute of Strategic and International Studies, talking to us about the UN report on climate change and, you know, really highlighting that, you know, role models will help. If the major countries take the lead on this, you know, that's a good step forward. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.